immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared. And the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works. And it's so easy to get your questions answered too. So why not? You can call right now. 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE. 833-39-BIBLE.
Based on what we're hearing from the White House and the preparations that are being made, it looks like a summit will take place between North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un and President Trump. The summit has been on again, off again, and now seems to be on again, although a date is not specific. People are still saying in the White House that it could be June 12th, but it could be June 7th. We don't know. One thing we do know is that former ambassador to the United Nations and governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, believes that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is the best person to handle these negotiations.
The president has a good leader in Pompeo because he's met Kim Jong-un twice. He established the intelligence channel with the North Koreans. He should let Pompeo take the lead, not have all these other voices, including the vice president. They should, and the president, they should let Pompeo lead the team. And if he does that, then I will concede that it's a good team. But so far, there have been too many messengers.
That audio courtesy of Fox News. This is USA Radio News.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. 866-490-3991. 866-490-3991. That's 866-490-3991.
The president also took to Twitter today to comment on the controversy surrounding Roseanne Barr. The president said Bob Iger of ABC called Valerie Jarrett to let her know that ABC does not tolerate comments like those made by Roseanne Barr. The president said he never received a call from Iger regarding some of the horrible statements made about him on ABC, or he just didn't get the call. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders was asked exactly what President Trump meant by his tweet.
The president's pointing to the hypocrisy in the media, saying that the most horrible things about this president, and nobody addresses it. Where was Bob Iger's apology to the White House staff for Jemele Hill calling the president and anyone associated with him a white supremacist? To Christians around the world for Joy Behr calling Christianity a mental illness? Where was the apology for Kathy Griffin going on a profane rant against the president on The View after a photo showed her holding President Trump's decapitated head? And where was the apology from Bob Iger for ESPN hiring Keith Olbermann after his numerous expletive-laced tweets attacking the president as a Nazi and even expanding Olbermann's role after that attack against the president's family? This is a double standard that the president is speaking about. No one is defending her comments. They're inappropriate, but that's what the point that he was making.
The Stanley Cup Finals continue tonight in Las Vegas, where the Knights will play against the Washington Capitals. Currently, the Knights have a 1-0 lead. Puck drops just after 5 o'clock Pacific time. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Well, will you look at that? Hockey finally made the news. I have never heard that before, so that is a start. Looks like Destination Hockey is doing its job in getting hockey across the national stage. Of course, that is a joke. But we will get to the Vegas Golden Knights and the Washington Capitals in a second. But first, let's take a look at the weather. It's not pretty outside right now. We have a chance of showers all night until 11 p.m., and it will be a low of around 60 degrees. And this weekend, we have scattered thunderstorms the entire weekend for prom weekend for many North Hunter and high school students. And then we've got 77 degrees on Saturday, and on Sunday, it's only going to be 60 degrees. And this will be all with the chance of showers and thunderstorms for the entire weekend. So that is your weather. We will be right back with Colin Stevenson of Newsday and Kristen Gardecki of Drive for Five to talk about the New York Islanders season and the New York Rangers making a pitch for John Tavares. So we'll be right back, so please stay tuned.
Bye. Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. My name is David Lazar, and we have a stacked show in store for you guys today. We have Newsday's Colin Stevenson coming on the show, and then Drive for Five's Christian Gardecki. So before we get to that, though, you heard it on the news. It is kind of a national story, and that is the Stanley Cup Final, because you have the Vegas Golden Knights, as we discussed last week, the underdog story of the century, and then the Washington Capitals, another team that has had a lot of struggles in the past and is having a career year all around. All these players are having great years, and in a year they weren't supposed to even make the playoffs or go far, they're in the Stanley Cup Final as well. But in Game 1 on Monday, we had, of course, the unsung hero who no one expected, and that was, for the Vegas Golden Knights, Thomas Nosek. This guy, you never hear his name. You never hear the announcer say, oh, Nosek with a nice play. He's just that quiet guy that no one really recognized and just does his job. But on Monday, he really emerged. And this is unlike him, because this guy last year wasn't even in the NHL. Nosek went undrafted, signed with the Detroit Red Wings as a free agent, and spent almost three full seasons in the AHL. He did win a Calder Cup, which is the AHL's Stanley Cup, essentially. So he does have some championship experience, but he was never a scorer. Never in his career has he gotten more than 15 goals, and he was never really a skilled player. He kind of reminds you of Cal Clutterbuck, if you were comparing him to someone on the Islanders. He's the big guy. He plays hard. He's gritty, but he isn't a scorer. And Marc-Andre Fleury, when asked what was the one thing that people know about Thomas Nosek, he's pointed out that he has a big ass, and that is a quote. So that's what people knew in the locker room about Nosek. Nosek wasn't a scorer. He wasn't someone who was expected to put up a goal. And prior to last night, his biggest goal was from Game 1 of the Calder Cup Final a year ago. He scored with 13 seconds left to beat Syracuse Crunch, and that, again, was a surprise. No one expected Nosek to be the guy to score in the Calder Cup Final. And in the Stanley Cup Final, it was the same thing. He scored the game-winning goal and empty net winner in Game 1 to seal the deal in the game for the Vegas Golden Knights. And he isn't someone that Vegas has even used in the past. He was healthy scratch in the season. But in typical Vegas fashion, their fourth line was the difference maker in that game. Riley Smith said that he's really quiet. Truth, no one really knows him here. But it's huge. Huge for him, huge for us. And that was Riley Smith, one of the best players, talking about Thomas Nosek. And the main part to keep in mind about that quote is no one really knows him here. This is an NHL locker room. These guys are a team. And one of the best players says no one really knows him. So this guy, not only did no one really pay attention to him on the ice, off the ice, he wasn't even a big part in the locker room. This guy, again, is indicative of the entire Vegas Golden Knights season, the spirit that they play with. And it's really nice to see someone like him just take up the charge and score the game-winning goal. And Vegas' fourth line, I just touched upon it, they are just out of this world, because you have Ryan Reeves, Thomas Nosek, Pierre-Edouard Bellemare, Gerard Gallant was even shuffling the lines a little bit. You had Ryan Carpenter on there a little bit. And these players are not what you'd call good players, but when they come together as a line, they're a force. They are on the ice in the offensive zone, in the defensive zone, in the neutral zone. They win faceoffs. They put points on the board. And Ryan Reeves, another guy who you just wouldn't expect, scored in his second straight game. And say what you want about how the goal was scored, he did basically cross-check John Carlson before the goal. That's what they do. They get away with these, you know, physical plays. Vicious is how I'll describe something else. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But they get away with these physical plays, and they just play such a nice brand of hockey that Vegas needs. So speaking of vicious, let's just talk about Tom Wilson for a second. This guy is the scum of the earth. I have never seen someone play so vicious. I said that word, but it's more than that. It's cheap, it's dirty, and there's no place for it in the NHL. Ryan Reeves did get away with that obvious cross-check on John Carlson, but it wasn't malicious. Tom Wilson completely obliterates Jonathan Marchessault. And this play was cheap. It was late. And he again got away with it. Say what you want about Tom Wilson. He's physical. You know, he plays the game hard, I guess you could say. But these hits that he's become known for are not okay. It was a blindside hit. Marchessault did not even see him coming. And that's really the concerning thing. These players that are getting absolutely killed by Tom Wilson don't even see him coming. It would be like you're driving in your car, you're sitting at a stoplight, and someone just rams into you from the side. You don't even see it coming. And these players, it's really scary because Tom Wilson comes up from behind, he comes up from the side, and he always has an excuse for these hits. After the game, in a press conference, he said he probably shouldn't be admiring his pass. I'm just finishing my check. There was ample time for Wilson to lay off, and he should have. But he saw 81, he saw the numbers of one of Vegas' best players, and he went after it, went for the kill, and injured Jonathan Marchessault. So thankfully, he was able to come back, but he did have to go to the concussion room, the black room. So Tom Wilson will do anything to get one of Vegas' best players off the ice, and I wouldn't be surprised in game two tonight if he hits another player in a cheap hit. He did it in Pittsburgh. He got away with a cheap hit on Brian Dumoulin. What does he do the next game? Absolutely destroy Zach Anston-Reese. It's not okay. And the NHL is trying to get away from physicality because of moments like this. And it's sad because fighting, clean hits, there should be a place for that in the game. But because of players like Tom Wilson, the NHL is even taking away players like Ryan Reeves and Matt Martin, their ability to play physical by increasing penalties because players like Tom Wilson are cheap and dirty. And I'm tired of watching it. This was one of the greatest moments in recent history for hockey. You heard them on the news. I'm telling you, you never hear hockey on the national news. You just don't. No one cares about hockey in America. But people are caring about the Stanley Cup final. Non-hockey fans are watching. And that's unusual. That really is unusual. ESPN starting to cover this Stanley Cup final more. Fox News was even covering it. I saw it on TV. This is just a national game, a national series that people are starting to care about. And what is everyone talking about after game one? Not the fact that it was 6-4, not Vegas' crowd, not the pregame ceremony, not Little John putting on a show before the game, not all the great things about this game. What are all these articles when you Google Vegas Golden Knights, Washington Capitals? All these articles are talking about Tom Wilson. And that I don't like. Tom Wilson needs to stop. We did a whole episode on this guy. I sat here and talked for 30 minutes about Tom Wilson, just rambling about him, because I can talk about Tom Wilson for so long because what he does is not fair. It's not fair to the NHL. It's not fair to players. If someone who was bigger than him came up to him and completely blindsided him, he would not be happy. And the worst part about Tom Wilson is players will try to fight him, and he won't stand up for himself. I guarantee you we will not see a Ryan Reeves-Tom Wilson fight in this series because Tom Wilson knows that if he fights Ryan Reeves, he will get the crap beaten out of him. I guarantee you Wilson doesn't fight someone bigger than him. He fights Braden Coburn of Tampa. He fights these little guys because that's all he can match up against. He's a baby. He uses his size. He's gigantic. He's a big guy. He hits the weight room. So he uses that, turns himself into a human catapult, catapults himself at players, and just uses his pure mass to go after the upper part of opposing players' bodies. And that's not okay. That's cheap. I don't like it. So hopefully we don't see another cheap Tom Wilson hit because he's turning casual hockey fans into Vegas Golden Knights fans. People don't like watching Tom Wilson play the game. I hate watching him. He's my least favorite player in the NHL. He's been doing it for years. I'm tired of it. And now in the Stanley Cup final, on the biggest stage in this sport, what are we talking about? We're talking about Tom Wilson, and I don't like that. So hopefully next week we're able to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights, the Washington Capitals, a great series. But right now we're talking about Tom Wilson again, and I don't like that. So we'll be right back with Colin Stevenson of Newsday. Very exciting interview. We're going to talk about John Tavares, about David Quinn, and about some of the young guys there. So please stay tuned to that great interview. Excuse me.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi and Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. We are here with a very special guest. We have Colin Stevenson of Newsday here to talk about the Rangers. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So the Rangers have been a really fun team for the past few seasons, always making the playoffs, always being competitive. But in your short time as the beat writer of the Rangers, you have experienced the start of a rebuild. So how did the trades at this past year's deadline signal it was a new era in New York?
The signal that it was going to be a new era came before the trades. You know, they actually announced to their fans, their management, that they were going to go in a different direction. And I listen, they got a lot of points for that. They're, you know, a lot of respect from fans and from those of us, you know, neutral observers. We thought, you know, it was good to see an organization being honest with the fans. Listen, they had had a good run. They got to a Stanley Cup final. And it probably started, you know, they bought out a couple of players the season before. They traded Derek Stepan, who was their number one center. And so they were drifting in that direction anyway. And then in February, when the team was still in the thick of a playoff race, I guess management kind of looked at it and said, you know what, what's the point of battling to get into the eighth spot? Why don't we just tear it down now? Most of the Ranger fans that I've spoken to, either on Twitter or people that I know personally and I've spoken to in person, are okay with it. So, you know, I think that, and I think they appreciated the honesty of the organization just kind of announcing that, okay, we're gonna rebuild. And so, you know, they dealt away a couple of unrestricted free agents coming up, and Rick Nash and Michael Grabner. So those guys were dealt away. And then, you know, the big one, the one that hurt the most, was trading away Ryan McDonough, who was, of course, the team's captain, to Tampa Bay. But, you know, they got back, you know, a couple of first-round picks and some nice-looking young prospects. And, you know, I think they feel pretty good about what they did.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And as a neutral observer, like you said, I really respected that letter. Because as an Islanders fan, you never see that. And that letter really, the fans Rangers fans, as you probably know, pay a lot of money to see this team play. And to get a letter like that really showed that they care about their fans. So that was really nice because other teams don't usually do that. So I respect that. I think the rebuild is successful. They have a competent management. So I think it's going to go well. But that trade deadline was big. And one of the pieces moved at the deadline was Rick Nash. And you got a first-round pick, a prospect, Ryan Lindgren. But one interesting thing for me was Ryan Spooner because he's a really good, not really that young of a player. He's an NHL-ready guy. So right. Do you see him being a large part of the Rangers' future given he's an RFA this year?
Well, I have to tell you that the answer to all of your questions is I don't know. We'll have to see. Look, they have a new coach. He is a guy that's coming from the college ranks, as you know, David Quinn. And with a new coach, you know, management's going to support him. They're going to give him a lot of leeway. They're going to try and see and figure out what kinds of players he likes to have, what kinds of a team that he wants to coach. I don't know whether Ryan Spooner's going to be a big part of that. I mean, I liked what I saw the time he was here. Mm-hmm. I think he's, you know, as you say, an NHL-ready guy. He's a good player. He was a good player for them in the time he was with the Rangers. And I think that they will, you know, they'll certainly, he's a restricted free agent, they'll certainly qualify him and look to re-sign him. But, you know, there's very few guys that are untouchable. You know what I mean? Like, he won't be in the minors or anything. Like, he's either going to be on the team or they'll trade him, you know, to get something else. But I don't know yet what direction they're going to go in with him. But he's a good player, and if he's on the team, if he's with the team in training camp, if he's on the team when the season starts, I think he'll be a good player. You know, maybe a top six forward for them. But you know, it's there's no way to know really what's going to happen.
Yeah, good point. Rangers are a rebuilding team, so you never know. But Ryan Spooner's a guy for me. Arguably, when he came over from the Bruins, he played better than Nash, and I thought he was a really good piece, and I think he can develop under Quinn into a really good player and top six guy, like you said. So we'll see what happens with him if he's on the team, but I think a good player, as you said. So moving on to another trade, you brought it up quickly. It was the Ryan McDonagh trade, and there was a lot of backlash specifically around this trade. The other trades were pretty good, and you know, a lot of fans like those. But the Ryan McDonagh trade, you trade a captain, but you also trade JT Miller. And this guy was a great forward for the team, top guy, and you gave him up. It seemingly was kind of unnecessary. I'm not sure how the negotiations went, but that was a big surprise. If you can go back, do you do that trade again, given the current Rangers roster?
The one thing you can't do is you can't just look at Namestnikov and compare him directly with Miller. Obviously, Miller outperformed him mm-hmm. after the trade. You know, Miller was not a throw-in. You know, Miller was a guy that Tampa Bay demanded on. You know, like, yes, they wanted Ryan McDonagh, but they also, and they said this, they needed grit. So they needed a guy like Miller. They just did not have that element in their team. So this was not like a throw-in in the deal. And the Rangers, you can't just look at those two guys and say, well, you know, couldn't you have swapped this other guy for this guy? No, that was the deal that they had. And, you know, they got a pretty good prospect out of it. Hayek, who will get a good look, at least in training camp. And they got a first-round pick out of it. So, is it a good deal? Will it be a good deal? That is not something you can say today. And you're going to have to see how the prospect plays. You're going to have to see what they do with the first round pick that they acquired. Do they keep it? Do they make the pick? Do they include that pick as part of a deal, you know, to get them an established player? We don't know how that's going to end up. But, you know, the point, I take your point. JT Miller was a good player for them, and Namestnikov really was a disappointing player for them. So, yes, I mean, duly noted, but I just don't know that you can, you know, that I can pass a judgment on that deal just yet.
Okay. And the Rangers, obviously, they're rebuilding, young team. And in my opinion, I think they hired the perfect coach for what they're trying to accomplish. David Quinn, he's a proven guy, great with the kids. He's developed stars, including Jack Eichel and hopefully Kiefer Bellows soon for the Islanders. What impact will he have on these young guys? Do you think he will gel with them?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think it's young, relatively young, what have you. There's a lot of guys on the team that come out of college. You know, they came to the NHL from college. And so it's not just whether you're 25 and under. It's sort of, you know, what's your background? Are you American? Did you play in college? And I think that a guy like Quinn, you know, will relate very well to those guys. And that's like half their team. How different is the NCAA game from the NHL game? I don't watch enough college hockey to be able to honestly tell you. It's still hockey. You still play, you know, six aside, as Jigs McDonald used to remind us, not five aside. The rink's the same size, you know, so the game is still the same. But, you know, the thing that struck me at his press conference, and I think one of the things he's going to have to adjust to is, you know, he talked about in college, they practice so much. You know, they practice four times a week, and they play, I guess, on the weekends. Well, in the NHL, I don't think he's going to be able to practice as much as all that. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's mostly, you know, a lot of the practices over the course of the season, you know, in training camp, it's a little different story because it's mostly practice. But once the season starts, most of your practices are just really kind of, you know, kind of getting the guy's legs moving, kind of working some stuff out. Maybe you can tweak some things or go over some adjustments and, you know, in-season adjustments and things like that. But this whole, you know, we're going to practice four times a week and be fully ready for the game, I think that's going to be the big thing that he's going to have to adjust to. But as far as dealing with the kids, dealing with the American kids, the college guys specifically, I think he is a great pick for them. And you know, I'm curious to see, you know, how it works out for him. I think he'll have a long leash, because I think they're probably going to go young. I don't, you know, hiring a college guy like that, a first-time NHL head coach, I suspect that they're probably not going to go out and sign a whole bunch of big money free agents and go for it all this year. I imagine that they're going to probably stay young and, you know, allow him to kind of grow into the job. So I think he's in a good spot, and I think he'll be good for the club that they put together.
Yeah, and staying young, you just said that. One thing that would kind of go against that, though, is this rumor that kind of has been forgotten recently. There was a rumor that the Rangers had, you know, had planned to sign Ilya Kovalchuk to a quite a hefty deal. Do you think that's still going to happen, or do you potentially see him looking at a Lou Lamoriello-led Islanders or another team?
Yeah, I think the Lamoriello move obviously comes into play as far as a guy like Kovalchuk. You know, Kovalchuk would make some sense for the Rangers, because, you know, even though if you're going to go young, and Jeff Gorton has said this, and said it again last week when he introduced David Quinn, you can't go too young. You can't go all young guys. Yeah. You're going to have some older veteran guys that kind of give you a chance on a nightly basis, to be competitive against the better teams. So I do think it would make sense for them to look into signing Ilya Kovalchuk. But Kovalchuk will have options. You know, I don't think a guy like that is going to come over after 5 years in the KHL at his age, which is 35, I think. Does a guy like that want to come to a rebuild situation? Or is he the kind of guy who thinks that, well, if I come, we're not rebuilding? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think Kovalchuk will have options. I think he can go to better teams that are closer to contending. So I don't know if it's necessarily going to work where the two sides will come together. But I do know that the Rangers would be an attractive spot for him. You know, it's New York. He's familiar with the in New Jersey. But the same, you know, he could do that on Long Island, you know, or not on Long Island, but in Brooklyn, or Brooklyn or Long Island or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Whichever way you want to call it there. I mean, that would still be New York. So, you know, he has options, and we'll just have to see whether, you know, he chooses to go work for Lou Lamoriello or you know, whether he wants to be a part of the Ranger rebuild.
Yeah. The reason why I brought that up, there was an unverified report that the Rangers were going to sign him and that it was agreed upon, but after some time, it doesn't seem like that report was true. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen with that, but I think Lou Lamoriello will affect that. But one guy that the Rangers might be using that's more likely is Elias Anderson. He's one of the best young players the Rangers have had in a really long time, and he has success on the international stage, good young prospect. Do you see him making an impact with the Rangers as soon as next season?
Making an impact, you know, remains to be seen. I saw him play in however many games it was, 5 or 6 games or 7 games or whatever it was, and I liked him just fine. But he's not a dynamic guy that's going to come in and score 40 goals or 80 points or anything like that. He's a guy who's really, you know, you can see if you watch him, he's one of these guys that thinks the game really well. You know, he's very smart. He's a two-way center. Right now, he's probably somewhere along the lines of a third-line center, and maybe can grow from there. Of course, he's only 19 or 20 or whatever he is. 19, I think. But he would come in next year, and I would anticipate, assuming he makes the club, he probably would start out in that third-line center role. So I don't know if you can really truly have what you call an impact as a third-line center. Now, does he grow as the season goes on? Who knows? I mean, it's not who else is in the lineup, and it depends on those and all the things. But he's not a physically imposing guy, and he's not a big guy. He's not a super-fast guy. He's just a real smart guy who seems to be in the right position all the time and makes the right play all the time. And there's a place in any team for a guy like that, and there certainly is a place on the Rangers for a guy like that. But, you know, it's not a guarantee. He's going to have to show up in training camp, and he's going to have to make the team, and he's going to impress a new coach. And I think he's a guy that will grow into the league and not kind of onto the scene. The other guy, Philip Hedel, is a much dynamic player. They came up together in first round picks last year. And Hedel is a bigger guy, faster guy, and a much more dynamic defensive player. And a guy like that, I could see having a bigger impact early in their careers. And maybe Anderson will be kind of like that steady guy that you appreciate more and more over time.
Mm-hmm. And the Rangers, their prospect core is starting to kind of bulk up. With the trades, they got some good players. One of those guys was Ryan Lindgren. And he's one of the better defensive players in the Ranger system, but he's not really what you'd call an elite defensive prospect. He's solid. But the Rangers have a very high quantity of defensemen, not really a great quality. So do you see Lindgren coming up next season, or is he one of those younger guys who will have to wait a few years to see in the NHL, you think?
Again, to be determined, new coach. I haven't seen him play personally, but all reports are, and speaking to people who have seen him play, is it sounds like what his game is something that they're missing, right? He is a tough kid who's difficult to play against. He's physical, and they didn't have that, quite frankly. They did not have that on their team at the end of the season, and they need it. If they're going to go forward and be a good team, they need that element. Now, at 20 years old, is he going to be in the lineup and be a second-pair defenseman? That's a lot to ask. 20 years old, it's still pretty young. But he will get a long look because his game is something that they need. Now, they have Brendan Smith, who was a guy that, filled that sort of role for them at the start of last season, at the end of the season previous, but didn't play well at the start of last season and ended up, getting waived and sent down to the minors. But he's still in the organization, still under contract, and if he can have a bounce-back season, he then could be a guy that could do those things for them. So it's not like Lindgren is the only guy in the system that could do those things. So, we don't know. But I'm looking forward to seeing Lindgren. because, you know, I'd like to see a Ranger team that has people on it that will hit people. You know, they didn't have too many of those guys this year.
Yeah, the Rangers, before they brought in McLeod, had like two fights in one game, and this was in like January. So the Rangers are not that physical of a team, and maybe Quinn comes in and changes that. But Lindgren's a guy who could, you know, add physicality to a team that desperately needs it. The Rangers are not very strong, pun intended, in that category. So moving on to a rivalry the Rangers have, and that is with the New York Islanders. But recently, the New York Islanders have had the upper hand. They're 11-1 in the last 12 games. Henrik Lundqvist just can't beat the Islanders. Jaroslav Halak, who might not be back next year, but he just dominated the Rangers every game. Where do you rank that rivalry in terms of the entire NHL?
I still think it's the best one. It's organic. You know, the geography alone, I mean, you have Rangers and Islander fans, you know, living in the same family. So, I mean, they share a media market. One team is the established team. One team is the, I don't want to say Johnny come lately, but, you know, because they've been around for 40-odd years. But you know, one team was clearly here. You know, the established team. One team's the second fiddle team, if you will. So I think that it is the best rivalry. Now, there are others. People would certainly, you could say Toronto, Montreal, or any original six teams, you know, Chicago, Detroit. These are legitimate rivalries. But some of the other rivalries that were good when, you know, I covered the NHL years ago, like Colorado, Detroit, you know, that became a rivalry because the teams kept bumping into each other in the playoffs every year, and the games were so good. But, you know, those kind of were like, that was a rivalry that kind of existed in a time. You know, I'm looking at rivalries that'll exist regardless of how good either team is or what the situation is for, you know, or what time it is, what year it is, what day it is. And I think Rangers-Islanders is always going to be one of the top rivalries. I'd say it's the best because, you know, any time you go into a building, you know, if you go to Toronto-Montreal, let's say, just picking that as an example, if the building, if you're in Montreal, it's all Montreal fans, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in Toronto, it's all Toronto fans. But if you go to a Rangers-Islanders game, there are going to be fans of both teams in the building, whether it's, you know, an Islander home game or a Ranger home game. So that's why I think that's the rivalry. And, of course, you have, you know, Devils-Rangers and then maybe Devils-Flyers, you know, Rangers-Flyers. So there's other rivalries. I don't want to suggest that there aren't other rivalries, but I still always would think Islanders-Rangers is number one.
Yeah, completely agree. It's just so natural and organic, just physical, and I love these games. They haven't really been able to get good at the same time for a while, but that just makes it even better almost because they're still competitive even though when one team hasn't been doing great. So completely agree with you on that. And one thing that could complicate the rivalry is John Tavares. And I'm not suggesting John Tavares will be a Ranger, but I think it's important to point out that John Tavares will most likely test the open market and that the Rangers, just with salary cap, proximity, and the team they have, they're a possibility. Do you see the Rangers making a push for Tavares? And obviously it's speculation, but could he be a fit with the Rangers?
You know what? It's interesting. If I was running the Rangers, he would be my primary target. Hmm. But everyone that I talk to, you know, who talk to people inside the organization tells me that no, he's not going to be a target for them. And people seem pretty confident about it. You know, as I said, if it was me, I'd absolutely go after him. But there's some sense, too, that, you know, Tavares, whatever his issues may be with the Islanders, he's kind of a loyal guy. I mean, it would be hard to imagine him. He's going to be stabbing the Islanders in the heart if he leaves as it is. I think if he leaves and goes to the Rangers, I mean, that would be like stabbing them in the heart twice. You know what I mean? So it's hard for me to imagine John Tavares taking the Rangers seriously as a place where he would go. However, the Rangers have its way, I mean, you know, of being able to, you know, throw money at people or do whatever they do and get people to reconsider and and go there. I mean, David Quinn is a good example. I mean, David Quinn had perhaps the best job in college hockey. And, you know, a college hockey coach is not going to make what an AHL coach makes. But I think the Rangers just overwhelmed him and made him leave a great job where he was happy and, you know, where he felt like he said at his own press conference he had unfinished business. And yet, you know, when the Rangers came after him, it just kind of made more and more sense for him to say, you know what, I just have to go. So I could see if the Rangers wanted to go after Tavares, making a really strong push for him. But all of my information is to the contrary. You know, they're not expected to go after him. And, you know, again, if you know anything about John Tavares, it's hard to imagine him signing with the Rangers anyway.
Yeah, so you think they don't even make a pitch, they just focus in other areas?
I'm sorry?
So you think they don't even make a pitch, don't even stick their feet in the water, they just ignore it?
I don't know that they even make a pitch, no. But, they could. I mean, I think if it was me, I would go after him hard. And if I didn't go after him hard, I would at least kind of investigate, you know, kind of get in there and do my due diligence. So I wouldn't be surprised if they make a pitch. But I'm telling you, everybody that I talk to tells me, you know, it's not going to happen.
Okay, that's interesting. The reason why this kind of all started, I remember there was this ESPN article, and they had a jersey swap of John Tavares in a Rangers jersey as the featured image, and the Rangers were one of their top targets for John Tavares, and Islanders fans flipped out. I mean, they went crazy, ballistic over this article. And the Rangers were always kind of this underdog because they're the Rangers. I mean, David Quinn even said the Rangers were the only team he would have done this for. And I heard his voice. There was a video. I don't think he was joking. I mean, he meant it. The Rangers just have this thing about them. Big Apple, there's just the New York Rangers. They're the team that, you know, everyone wants to go to. So John Tavares and the Rangers, there's been these rumblings. But, I mean, if you say they might not make a pitch, that's interesting because that takes one team off the market that really could go after him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, too, about JT is, you know, he's a humble guy. I don't, you know, he doesn't strike me as a guy that really is big into, like, the spotlight, you know. So I think he has, right now, the Islanders, he's got the best of both worlds. He gets to live in New York and not play for the team that gets, you know, the big media attention, so to speak. So, you know, I don't know if a guy like that would necessarily enjoy the bright lights of Broadway, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, but as you said, and as we saw with David Quinn, the Rangers have a way of convincing people that, hey, you know, if they really go after people, sometimes they, you know, they're able to do it and tell people, listen, you need to be here. You know, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere kind of thing.
Yeah, really good point. I'm glad we talked about that because Islanders fans are fretting over this. It's a tough situation, and the Rangers were that underdog, but, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of relief there knowing that they might, you know, it might not be what everyone's made out to be, but that ESPN article really scared everyone. But moving on, yeah, I know, it was just crazy, but moving on to you personally, we're running low on time here, and I definitely want to talk about this. You've had a ton of success in your field. You've covered a ton of teams, a lot of sports in the, you know, tri-state area, the New York area specifically, and it's just, you've been really versatile just from, you know, looking at social media. You've covered a lot of teams. And how important has it been to be so versatile and be able to do really whatever's asked of you?
I think it's, you know, I think more than ever before, it's important to be versatile. I mean, our business is changing, and it keeps reinventing itself. And the way that people get their news and their information keeps changing. And we don't know, quite frankly, what the business is going to look like in the next few years, you know, what new innovations are going to come out and, you know, and what you're going to be required to do. And so I think the more things you can do is the more valuable you become. You know, like when I started in the business, there was no Twitter. You know, there was no internet, for that matter. You know, there were no cell phones. I mean, you know, on a summer off season, you know, I would had a home office. I would sit at the home office, make my phone calls, and I would be stuck at that office waiting for people to call me back, right? So then, you know, you got the internet, and then you got cell phones, and so things are constantly evolving, and you have to evolve along with them, and you have to be able to adapt to whatever the industry is asking you to do next. And so I think versatility is something that we all have to have in the business. And the jobs are shrinking, and the more things you can do, the more marketable you become. So I think for anybody that's out there that wants to get into this business, it's tough to do it as an expert in one thing. I think you have to be an expert in one thing, but you also have to know how to stretch yourself a little bit. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you gotta be able to do other things when need be.
Yeah, definitely. And you were a freelance writer for some time. What was that like? Because I'm a little unfamiliar with that.
Freelancing, it's not what it used to be. In theory, freelancing is a good thing because it allows you to do lots of different stuff and allows you to have control over, the things that you do. You work when you want to. And you do assignments that you want to do in theory. But, it's getting tougher and tougher to do because, there are so many freelancers out there now. And there are so many, the other thing is that there are so many outlets. So that whereas you had, a couple of places that you could rely on, we're going to get a certain amount of work from this place, we're going to get a certain amount of work from that place. Now, you've got to actually work a lot harder. It becomes, as a freelancer, it becomes more, less about the actual work and more about finding work, if you know what I mean. So you got to drum up some business, you got to spend, almost like a salesman, you're selling yourself. And so it becomes more challenging because as opposed to myself now, working for Newsday, I work for one boss and I do what they tell me to do. If you're a freelancer, you could work potentially for an infinite number of bosses, It's just mm-hmm. a question of, finding, making contacts with people that will hire you. So it becomes, you are your own boss in a sense because you get to choose when and where you work. But you've also got to find that work. So it's a different animal.
Yeah, and a lot of networking, like you said. But just quickly before we let you go, just one piece of advice you have for young journalists. I like to ask a lot of people who have success this question.
Well,
because everyone
the biggest
gives,
piece of advice, right. if you're a young journalist, is to talk to people and to make contacts with people. And then if specifically if you're going to be a journalist who's a writer, you're going to write for a news website or a newspaper as I do, you've got to write, constantly be writing. Even when I was freelancing in periods that were slow for me in terms of actual work, I had to keep writing. So I started a blog and was writing regularly in that. And I wrote often because you have to keep your skills sharp. So do that. Keep your skills sharp. Write a lot and talk to people, make contacts, and print up some business cards. Makes it easier to hand them out.
Oh, yeah. I do have business cards, and that did wonders at Islanders games. I would hand them to Brendan Burke, Butch Goring, Shannon Hogan, all the announcers, and they'd email me and arrange interviews. So that was great. Great advice. And thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was really great to talk to you about the Rangers, a new perspective, a new team that I don't usually follow. So thank you so much for giving up your time today.
Okay, it's my pleasure to do it. Anytime you need me, just give me a call.
All right, thank you. I'd love to stay in touch, and hopefully I speak to you soon. So thank you.
All right, David. Thanks very much.
All right, of course. Have a good day.
Bye.
So that was Colin Stephenson. Great interview. Really interesting to talk about the Rangers and even John Tavares, which he thinks not as much fire to that rumor as we are thinking. So ESPN might have had some clickbait with John Tavares in a Rangers jersey, but it looks like we are not going to be seeing the Rangers make a huge pitch for John Tavares, although we could still see them do it. According to Mr. Stephenson, not all that likely. So we will be right back with Christian. He's a Drive for Five writer. He covers the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. We're going to talk a little bit of AHL hockey for the first time on Destination Hockey. Calder Cup is in full swing, so I'm really excited to talk about the Calder Cup and the AHL with him. So please stay tuned to a great interview with Christian.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. On today's episode, we have a very special guest for you guys. We have Christian Gardecki, who's here to talk about the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. So thanks for coming on the show, Christian.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So the Islanders, we all know Lou Lamoriello is the new president of hockey operations. How will he affect the Islanders' minor league affiliate, the Sound Tigers?
Well, Lou ran the minor league teams in Toronto. Well, he had Kyle Dubas, who's now the GM there. He was very heavily involved with creating a team of prospects. You know, I remember 2016. They had all the young prospects and great veterans on that team. Brought them through really good years. Same with this year. That team right now is in the quarter of the finals. That's a team that was built by Tim and Dubas. So I can see him doing this in Bridgeport. I mean, Lou is a really smart guy. He knows hockey really well. And it also helps he's working with his son, Chris, who is our GM right now here in Bridgeport.
Yeah, really important thing to point out. He's kind of got the father-son thing going on, so I'm sure they'll be connected, and Lou Lamoriello will have a big impact on Bridgeport. And two players that have really been struggling, Josh Ostang, Michael Dalcol, do you think their careers kind of resurrect themselves with Lou Lamoriello leading the charge?
I don't know. I mean, see, Josh Ostang is one of the best personalities in all of hockey. That's tough to say. That's really tough to even mention. But I think that if Josh and Michael both have a good year, they can get themselves up top. Because I did an article about 3 months ago for DriveForFive.org, so check it out, everybody, and saying how Michael Dalcol was not a bust yet. Now, there are many guys in that draft who are big stars, and now David Pastrnak and a couple other guys, but these two, I mean, they've been playing together for a long time. They're around 10 years old. I interviewed these guys before. I worked for you guys, and they were, you know, they were together, and you like, you know, he's one of my best friends of all time, always together on the road. So it'd be tough to say what happens to Lou. I think either they stay and go up the Islanders, see what happens here this offseason, or they get traded, which I do not want to see, or go down Bridgeport.
Yeah, really interesting to point out. And then the Islanders do have a lot of, just like the Rangers, a very high quantity of defensive prospects, not exactly the best quality. Do you see any of the defensive guys, whether it's Aho, Von de Sopel, Devon Toews, do you see them making an impact with the Islanders next year?
Well, the thing is, it depends if they re-sign Calvin Hahn. That's one of the non-talked-about questions this summer. Will they re-sign Calvin Hahn? Many articles I've read, yes, they will re-sign Calvin Hahn. He's a loyal guy. Been here for 7 years now. But who's a guy like Seidenberg? You could see some of Aho come up. Aho played great beyond his brother the last 13 seasons. So, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Taves was wounded by injury this year. Vanisop was all-star. So was Aho. Vanisop was one of those young guys who was another guy wounded by injury. He's another guy who just keeps growing every game I see him. It was tough to say. I didn't see all three of them next year.
Yeah, really something that I'm not sure we'll see them up for an extended period of time. I think it'll be more of like an injury replacement type thing. But the Islanders have these solid defensive players that you don't want to see them in Bridgeport for too long because they could adjust too much to the AHL game. These are NHL defensemen, whether it's next year or in 3 years. So I would like to see them get some time in the NHL. That would be ideal. So then you have the Calder Cup playoffs. This is the untalked about excitement of the basically hockey world. The Calder Cup is really fun because you see five overtime games. You see seven-game winning streaks, which doesn't really happen in the NHL. And just a lot of great teams going at it with these young players that maybe should be in the NHL, maybe shouldn't, but they're just playing their heart out at the AHL level. So if you want to give a little bit of a preview into the AHL playoffs, you've got the Toronto Marlies in the Calder Cup. They just beat the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Just, you want to give a little preview into the Calder Cup final?
So that's starting in a couple of days, actually. Toronto, another team that was basically selected by Lou Amarillo, a lot of veterans. Rich Clune, former L.A. King, playing for them. Veterans. Lou Amarillo filled that Toronto roster with veterans. And they play against a really strong Texas team who has been here before. Some of these guys were on this team about 4 years ago when the Stars made it to the Calder Cup Finals and beat St. John's IceCaps, who are now in Manitoba. So it would be hard to say. Texas beat, they beat Rockford, who was coached by former Islander Jeremy Colleton. But, the thing that is different in this series is the goaltending. You have two strong goaltenders in both sides. Garrett Sparks from Toronto, and then you have for the Texas Stars in San Diego, Mike McKenna. But I think Toronto gets the series in six. Texas showed some, resistance at times versus Rockford, but we'll have to see what happens here. I like the Toronto team. I mean, they come close every year. They're led by Kyle Dubas, who's now the GM of the Leafs. So, and also Sheldon Keith, a great coach there. See what happens there. I think Toronto in six. I really like the Marlies.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go Marlies in four, though. The Marlies are on an eight-game winning streak. That is unbelievable. The team going on an eight-game winning streak, I don't see them losing a game against the Stars, even though the Stars are a great team. So that's my prediction. So that was the Calder Cup preview. We talked Bridgeport. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We're running out of time here, but the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, hopefully they can end their playoff streak with Lou Lamoriello coming on board. That would be really nice to see because the Islanders have been struggling, but Bridgeport, as you know, they may have been struggling for more. So hopefully Lou Lamoriello changes that. Yep, 15 years. That is a long time. So the Islanders, they were 23 years without one, but they recently won one. Bridgeport, 15 years. That is really, really hard to see. So thank you for coming on the show. Hopefully we can talk soon. And go Sound Tigers.
All right, see you, David. Thanks.
All right, see ya. So that was Christian. On Drive for Five, we put up a lot of great content, interviews. We archive every episode of Destination Hockey. A lot of good stuff. So check out driveforfive.blog. Christian is one of our great writers there. So thank you, Christian, for coming on the show. And this was another great episode. Really exciting to talk with all these great beat writers and reporters. We have Arthur Staple coming up, a surprise guest from the New Jersey Devils, a local guy. So, we're attempting to turn Hunterdon County into a hockey town. And I think we're doing a little bit better with that. I like to bring everyone weekly content with great guests. So thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next week. So I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email